It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. It's interesting how sports appear and develop and then become popular or die out. A new sport has to meet a new need. Disc golf seems to have done that, and it has exploded into a major sport for Alaskans in Anchorage and other communities. If you haven't tried it, you've seen folks walking through our wooded parks and the mushroom-shaped targets with their hanging chains to catch the discs. Today on Outdoor Explorer, we're learning about disc golf, how it is played, the challenges, and what makes it fun and interesting, and how it is being done competitively all over the state, not just in Anchorage. And so we have two guests with us. Tim Kasednar is with us in the studio. He's a avid disc golfer here in Anchorage and cyclist and involved in a lot of stuff. Thanks for being with us, Tim.
Thank you, Charles.
And Curtis Schoenberg is in Homer, where he is involved in the Alaska Disc Golf Association, and there's a course in Homer, too. Thanks for being with us, Curtis.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Charles.
So, Tim, tell me how you originally became aware of disc golf and how it sort of showed up in Anchorage.
Well, I grew up in Wisconsin, and Frisbee was sort of my toy of choice with my friends. And, you know, as a teenager, I remember organizing the Bethesda Open, which was a disc golf tournament in a local park, and we played with garbage cans and light poles, and they call that an object course. So the fun thing about Frisbee golf is you can make up a course with objects, and that's how it started in Anchorage. In the 80s, Duke Russell was living down by Westchester Lagoon, and he kind of created a course that went along the inlet and up eventually to Valley of the Moon Park using light poles and objects. Mm-hmm. And over time, as more people started playing, it kind of evolved from an object course using garbage cans and the like to tone poles, which is a target device, PVC pipe with some bells in it that you would try to hit that particular
ring
thing.
The bell.
Ring
mm-hmm.
the bell. And some of the folks in the group traveled down to the lower 48 and experienced what a professionally made target was like, the ones you see in some of the parks now with mm-hmm. the chains and the baskets. And they came back, and I say, you know, they had chain fever. It's, we can't throw at these plastic pipes anymore. We have to really have chains and really have baskets. So uh-huh. the first set were made in around the year 2000, kind of a red-green looking kind of homemade basket with a car tire on the bottom and a bike tire on the top and chains hanging in between.
Uh-huh.
And there was enough local interest in this small user group at the time that people just got out their checkbook and made a contribution, mm-hmm. and we bought the targets and had them shipped up here. And originally the idea was to put them in at Kincaid, but took a little while for that whole thing to shake out. So the old homemade targets out of Westchester were replaced by these disc catcher targets that are manufactured specifically
for
the
sport. And
that's
not very long ago. That's like 10, 12 years ago that sort of the first
right.
official targets were put in. And now it seems like everybody's playing disc golf. So there's something like about this sport that really people want to do.
I agree. And I'm not really sure what it is. I mean, it's mm-hmm. really a lot of fun, but it seems to have caught on, especially with, you know, adolescents. And, uh-huh. The location of the Westchester Lagoon course is right near a junior high and a high school. A lot of the kids would come down after school and play there. Turned into kind of this really cool thing to do and really got out of hand with overuse. I mean,
yeah.
you know,
we'll get into that later. Yeah, so Curtis, you've got a course down there in Homer now too.
Yeah, we actually have two courses. One is a private course located up on East Skyline, and that's owned by two friends of myself and Tim's, and they sit on 40 acres, and they have a full 18-hole course there with, I think it's 72 looks or 70-something different looks. They have quite a few different layouts. And then just last summer, we put in a course in town that's out east end about a mile and a half, maybe a mile and three quarters, and that's down at Jack Gist Park on Adams, which is a newly developed park that the city has created, and where we have three softball fields, and then we have a nine-hole disc golf course similar to Westchester Lagoon.
So was there already a community of folks who wanted to do it down there? I mean, I guess that probably people have picked up the sport around the country and then have sort of showed up in Alaska and want to keep doing it. Or how did it catch on in Homer?
It caught on in Homer because, yeah, there was a group of folks who had played it before and were into it from living elsewhere or coming up from the 48. And so the private course was the first one that was created, and that was maybe created, 8 years ago. And originally that was created, like Tim was talking about, as an object course where we were throwing at trees. We had buoys laying out there hanging from trees that we would try and hit. And over the years, it's just progressed where we've replaced these buoys and old objects with actual baskets. And, kind of along the sense of if you build it, they will come. And we did build it, myself and Eden Badajos and a couple other people. And the sport slowly started to grow. And we soon realized that, yeah, private course is great, but, to really be a huge contribution to the town and to the area down here, the recreational community, we were really going to need to have something that was in town, accessible for everyone, and something that people could go play on their own time rather than calling and getting permission from the landowners if they could come up and play. So we really fought hard with the city, and it was certainly not a quick and easy thing. And I don't say fought, but we really pushed very hard to show support and show the benefits of the sport. And, basically myself and five or six other guys were the ones who designed and installed the course and did all the work.
I'm interested from both of you guys, you're talking about sort of the effort of bringing the sport alive in Alaska. And it's a pretty innocuous thing. It's not something that like people would necessarily want to resist, but I wonder if there's an aspect of this lack of comprehension and sort of distrust about what is this new thing. I mean, what kind of reaction did you run into? Curtis, I mean, you were saying you had to do some explaining down there in Homer.
Yeah, we did. We certainly had a lot of people on board, but we had a few folks, mainly just a handful of folks who lived in the neighborhood closest to the park, and they were kind of adamant against it. And I think a lot of that had to do with the lack of knowledge, like you had mentioned, Charles, and at the same time that we were kind of pushing for it. There was this whole huge debate over Westchester and what are we going to do there, and there's all this trash and there's so much usage there. And I think a lot of people thought, oh my gosh, if this happens here, this is exactly what's going to happen down here in Homer, if that's what's happening in Westchester. And, we really tried to assure the people that, Homer and Anchorage are kind of two different beasts, and that we were going to really be good on maintaining and talking with people and using appropriate signage to show people, hey, this is a park just like any others. Whatever you pack in, you pack out. And please be respectful of, the people who live next to the park, our neighbors. Most importantly, we want to keep them happy so that we can continue to have the park and use it, because this is a course that we can play year-round, similar to Westchester, even though now it's only a seasonal course. One of the benefits I think about disc golf is that it is a year-round sport, mm-hmm. and it can be played throughout the entire yeah. year, and that's something that I think Tim and myself have come to really enjoy over the years, is being able to play whether it's the middle of December or the middle of June. It's still something you can go out and do every day.
Yeah, and I want to get into that later, but what do you think it is about disc golf that suggests to people, or maybe it's a reality that creates an issue of increased conflict? Because, I guess I think of a regular golf course as being a pretty good neighbor. I think of most people would not be concerned about having a park next to their homes. People, I guess, would be concerned about having a skateboard park next to their homes. I mean, right? I mean, so Tim, can you address that? Like, what makes disc golf different in that respect, if anything?
Well, I think part of it is the user group it's pretty attractive to like adolescent males, mm-hmm. and they just need a little space and time to grow up. Mm-hmm. And if you're, unfortunate enough to have to be around a big group of them when they're exploring the boundaries between acceptable and unacceptable behavior, it might degrade your park experience.
Sure, I hear you, yeah.
And even though we're all playing disc golf, it's really a very wide range of people who do the sport. It's not mm-hmm. like all disc golfers are alike. It really can be a very
very democratic. And at Kincaid, where I spend a lot of time running and skiing and so forth, I see a variety of types of people doing disc golf. I don't see a ton of teenagers. I see more, I would say the average disc golfer that I see is maybe in his 20s or so, you know, and is not, you know, being just as good a park user as anybody else.
I think that's fair. I think Westchester, you know, it's Kincaid's 11 miles away, and you have to be pretty serious about wanting to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And Westchester, you know, one of the appeals on it, it's right on the Chester Creek Trail. It's very easy to get to. It's 5 minutes from downtown, and, you know, it, you know, got used a lot because it was such a cool place and so easy to get to.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfworth. We're talking about disc golf today. And I have two guests with me. Tim Kasednar is here with me in the studio in Anchorage. And Curtis Schoenberg is in Homer. Both are avid disc golfers. And Curtis is also has helped create a course down there in Homer. And there, we've got courses all over Alaska now. It's a really a fast developing sport. And I want to get into that, just the love of the sport and the challenges and how you do it and tons of other stuff about it. But we've kind of gotten into this topic of the controversy surrounding Westchester Lagoon. And rather than keep people on tenterhooks about what we're talking about, Tim, can you just give us the background of what happened? There are some neighbors who are unhappy about noise and crowding, or what occurred down there and what was the solution?
Well, the biggest issue down there was use. On a good summer day, so you have a 20-hour daylight period, and that means a lot of people can recreate. And I've counted 10,000 people go through the tunnel under the Spinard Road there, one way or the other, on a nice sunny day. And that area...
Do you still live down there in that neighborhood?
Yeah, I live nearby. I've lived there for a very long time.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
One of the reasons why the course went in there in the first place, because a bunch of golfers live nearby, and it was just the natural location to do that. And it was kind of underutilized at the time. Mostly people were sleeping in the woods there, and it was, you know, kind of off to the side. But what happened,
just to orient people who don't know, if you're driving down Minnesota Drive towards downtown, you go around the smaller part of Westchester Lagoon. There's Margaret Egan Sullivan Park, and there's that little wooded area, and that's where the disc golf takes place, is there on the right. And that's part of the course.
Right. There's a tunnel. There's two tunnels there.
Right.
There's the Minnesota tunnel on the far side, so part of the course is there. In between the two tunnels, there's another section of the course.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, before the other tunnel by the parking lot at the bottom of the Spinard Hill is the first part. And the way the tunnels are oriented, the lines of sight are very poor. You can't go through there and see anybody coming in from the other side.
That's right.
And so even if anytime there's a big event down there, it's really very congested. If it's a Heart Walk or a marathon or any of these other big user events, it just gets congested down there and difficult to get through. And the golf course is located near the trail, and as the usage went up, people started, you know, stacking up waiting to get on the tee box, and they were standing on the trail, and then they were two or three groups standing on the trail, and then people would come through the tunnels on bikes and couldn't see the fact that all these people were standing on the trail, and, you know, they're not using the trail, they're not walking down the trail, they're just standing around waiting to get on the golf course. And so, you know, there's just too many people in too small a space, and it's very difficult to change that. So
how did those concerns get expressed?
To the Park Commission. They're kind of the regulating body. If you're a citizen and you want to make something happen in a park or change something, you go see them.
So then it came back to the disc golfing community. Hey, guys, there's a problem here.
Right. And I'd seen that for a while, and really overuse is the problem. And the solution to overuse is really spread it out a little bit and try to get some new courses in. And we kind of ran into the catch-22. Well, we're not going to put a new course in somewhere until you guys fix what's going on at Westchester. And really, to fix Westchester, you had to have other courses that people could go play so that they wouldn't have, you know, it's the one and only course. It's the easiest to get to. It's the nicest. It's the most convenient. There's no way, you know, to cut back on that. So I suggested let's just play in the winter. There's only 5 hours of darkness, you know.
5 hours of light.
Hours of light, and there's really not going to be an overuse issue then. Plus, there's a lot of less people using the trail that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So probably ideally, until we get some more courses and spread it out a little more, and it's been very slow going. There still really aren't other recreational courses similar to what Westchester offers the beginner and recreational user. That is still the best example of a recreational course in town. Mm-hmm. So until we get a few more of those and opportunities for those people to find it in their own neighborhood, you know, you shouldn't really have to come across town to play recreational golf. It should be something you can ideally do at a park mm-hmm. in your walking distance from your home, ideally. So that's, you know, the user group has to mature. They have to find a way to raise money mm-hmm. and do the public process part that'll make it possible to have some more options in town.
So we're still like in that early growth stage where there's a lot of people who want to do it. But in terms of the organizational part, the club and the money raising and going right. going to meetings and all that stuff, it's still kind of in its infancy.
Right. So the user group is not a really sophisticated group necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, the single track users, for example, they're kind of older and they have a, you know, experience, and they did all that work on these fantastic single track trails.
They raised money and put a ton of money, effort into it.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you can raise $500,000, you can get a golf course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the group mm-hmm. isn't quite that sophisticated yet. And, you know, the gem of all groups would be the Nordic Ski Association right. of Anchorage.
Which has been around for 50 or 60 years.
50 years yeah. locally, and there's 10,000 years of cultural and historic mm-hmm. Skiing to kind of back that all up.
Right.
So
right.
And the Frisbee is kind of from the 60s, and we're still getting our feet on the ground and figuring out how to work with the other user groups and kind of promote our sport.
How did you do it in Homer, Curtis? How did you create this ability to build a course and overcome the barriers?
Well, we knew that, you know, from the get-go that we really needed to have a public course. You know, we knew that we just needed something to offer to folks down here in the Southern Peninsula. And, you know, we looked around at the kind of the city land that might be available for recreational use. And when this land became available and we had these three softball fields put in, you know, we looked at the surrounding area and we thought, you know, hey, this has potential. And so we basically you know, proposed to the Parks and Rec Board and the City Council that, you know, we would really love to be able to put in this course. You know, we worked very closely with Parks and Rec on, you know, how we want, you know, basically we gave them idea of what we thought the course could be like, and then we just kind of worked together, giving each other feedback on what would work, what wouldn't work, what we wanted, you know, what was going to be the safest, because obviously, you know, if there still are softball games going on, you know, we wanted to make sure that nobody was going to get hurt or nothing serious was going to happen. So really, we just worked as closely as we could with the Parks and Rec Commission and Mike Ilg of Homer Community Recreation down here too, and everybody from the Park and Rec was very supportive, and we were thrilled to have their support and their backing for that, because we realized that disc golf is, you know, once we put the course in, you know, our work was pretty much done. You know, all we really need to do these days is just cut the grass and do a little maintenance here and there. And, you know, I think the sport itself just has so many benefits that, you know, it gets you outside, it gets you moving, it gets you walking. You know, it's very inexpensive to play. You can have just one disc and play with that for years to come, or, you know, you can become a little more into it and buy a couple more discs. And so, you know, we just tried to really highlight the benefits of disc golf. And, you know, I've
noticed that there's this, that, you know, the entry level, all you need is a Frisbee, but the more advanced players have a whole bag of stuff, and they look like,
yes,
they look like golfers on the golf course carrying around this big bag. But entry level is probably much, much easier than, I don't know, real golf. I don't know what regular golf,
yeah,
where you have to have actually quite a bit of equipment, and you have to have some significant skill even to play it at all.
Exactly.
I guess with disc golf, you just need to be able to throw a Frisbee straight, right?
Yeah, you do. And, you know, the reason why you do see those people with bags, is because, one, they're probably a lot more serious about playing the sport, and two, just like with a golf club, you know, a certain disc does a certain thing. You know, one disc might only go 100 to 150 feet, while another goes 300 to 400 feet, and while one turns left, the other might turn right. So just like with, you know, ball golf with your clubs, you know, you might not hit your sand wedge off the tee. You know, there's all these differences to these discs, and now with the technology that's coming out and the things that a lot of these companies are doing, it's really opening up the market to what can be done and the possibilities of what's out there. I mean, when Tim first started playing, there probably wasn't a whole lot of discs to choose from, so you got what you got. And now there's at least 5, 6, or 7 companies that are all making discs, and they're all different, and they do different things, and it's just incredible to see, just within the last 5 years, how much the sport has really exploded. And a lot of people refer to disc golf as the biggest sport you've never heard of.
Yeah, it has exploded. So if I want to try, I've never done it. I don't know that I were talking about it. I have no idea why. I've never done it. So I love throwing a frisbee. I guess I always thought, well, somebody needs to show me how. But I mean, what are the basics? Pretend we're talking to a listener right now, has a frisbee, knows there's a golf course. Well, how do they do it? Tim, do you want to start on that one?
Sure. I can say you can play disc golf with any frisbee you are comfortable throwing. Mm-hmm. And even though there are discs that are specifically designed for golf, you can still do an object course. You can make up a course at your local neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, you can take your kids out if you have kids that want to play with you and say, okay, I'm going to throw it. We'll throw to the garbage can, and whoever gets there in the fewest throws gets to make the next hole up. And so whoever gets there in the fewest. If you go to like Kincaid Park, or if you go to Hilltop Ski Area, or any of the courses that are at the junior highs like Hanshu or Eagle River High School or Service, there's hole number one. You have to kind of hopefully go with someone who knows the way, or find the sign that has the map, mm-hmm. or go online to the Disc Golf Association site and download a map to the course.
Which you can find at alaskapublic.org, our website.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Charles. And so you find hole number one, and there's a tee pad, which is the beginning place. And then you kind of follow rules similar to golf. You know, you take turns throwing, and whoever is furthest away from the target is the next person to throw. And you count the number of throws until you get to the target. And then whoever got there in the least amount of throws gets to go first at the next tee pad. And so the scoring and the protocols and the etiquette are all very similar to ball golf.
So everybody's throwing from the same tee towards the same target.
Right.
What were you talking about, Curtis, when you said there are different views? What does that mean?
Say that again? I'm sorry, Charles.
Yeah, when you were talking about that one course, you said it had something like 70 views?
Basically, you know, what we've done up at this private course, the name of the course is called the Moose Pretzel, is basically, you know, we have 18 baskets out there, but we have a set of red looks, you know, which are different tees.
Looks.
So we have, like if you went to a ball golf course and there's maybe a ladies tee and a men's tee and a pros tee, that's kind of what we've done out there is we've, you know, because we've realized we might not be able to buy more baskets, but we certainly have the land to be able to change the look of the hole just by moving it maybe 50 feet to the left or the right or 100 feet back. So we have 18 red looks, 18 green looks, 18 blue looks, and then we have basically a safari style, which is just a 9-hole course, but it's where we have overlapped holes onto each other, so they might play twice as long. You know, we might tee off from the third tee box, but we might be playing now to the fourth basket, you know, on the fourth tee. So we just try and mix it up and use the space that we have. And we've kind of done the same thing down at Jack Gist at the course in town. And Kincaid is another example of that, where you can go out there and you can play from the AM tees, or you can go out there and you can play from the pro tees. And the difference is quite significant. So, you know, if you're an AM player, you know, the AM tees are great. If you really want a challenge and to test your skill and mental game, then the pro tees are a good option too.
So it's super, those are the super challenging long tees, like,
yes,
you know, at a big,
yes.
Yeah. I love the phrase ball golf. I've never heard that before, but that puts it in its place.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is a really interesting topic. Actually, a lot more to it than I ever expected. And I'm just sitting here thinking, well, why have I not done this? I think I would love this. It sounds like a lot of fun. We're on Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. My guests are Curtis Schoenberg, who we just heard from. He's down in Homer. And Tim Kasednar is here in the studio with me. And we will be back in the second half of the show to talk much more about disc golf, about how you do it, why it's fun, about the sort of the more advanced game and the different courses around town and around the state. Lots more to cover, but right now we're going to go to the Outdoor Explorer calendar. Food preservation classes have begun in the Cooperative Extension in Anchorage. Classes on pickling, drying, making sausage, jerky, and jams will be held Wednesdays 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. in Anchorage. Two classes remain in October and two in November. For dates, more info, and to reserve your spot, go to the Cooperative Extension in Anchorage website. Tickets are now available online for the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage's ski train to Curry. Non-members can purchase ski train tickets starting November 4th. On the other hand, if you're a skier, you should be a member because that's what pays for our trail. So put a plug in there for NSAA. And I believe the tickets may be available already for members. Anyway, the train goes where cars cannot, to remote backcountry. The snowy landscape is beautiful and accesses terrain for skiers and snowshoers. Passengers enjoy a 4-hour train ride to relax and socialize. The ski train is scheduled for March 22nd, 2014, and you need to sign up soon because it does book up every year. For more information, go to the AnchorageNordicSki.com. The Willow Dog Mushers Association will host a canine athlete symposium this Saturday, October 5th at 9 a.m. at the Willow Community Center. Learn more about GPS, extreme weather gear, alternative gang lines and harnesses, sled fixes, on the trail, and mushing Denali. Also planned is a parade of dogs, which are life-sized wooden dogs painted by local artists. Afternoon sessions include a panel discussion on responsible kennel ownership, stage racing, and a Yukon Quest panel. For details, go to thewillowdogmushers.org. And finally, the 2013 Zombie Half Marathon in Kids Zombie 2.5K is coming up on Saturday, October 12th in Anchorage. To tell us a bit more about it, we have with us by phone race director Betty Cronin. Hi, Betty.
Well, hi, Charles. How are you?
I'm great. I think this is such a fun event. You know, runners can take themselves a bit seriously, but in this one, you've got people dressed up in all kinds of crazy costumes to run a half marathon, and then there's a kids' race as well. Tell us about, I was there at the beginning of the race last year, and it was fun to see a good portion of people dressed up.
There are quite a number who dress up, probably 50%, maybe a little more. And then we're encouraging everyone to dress in costumes, and we're also encouraging volunteers to be along the trail to just be zombies out there with them when the runners come by. And then at Kincaid, for the 2.5K for children, almost all of them dress up in
yeah.
some manner. And there are quite a few children who participate in that event.
I guess being chased by a zombie could give you your best time, right?
Well, it possibly could. And,
yeah.
And hopefully, I believe the weather will hold and we will not. It will just be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice if it's not freezing cold. Yeah. So the half marathon, does it start again at Goose Lake this year?
The half marathon begins at Goose Lake and ends at Kincaid Park.
So it just follows the bike trail.
All the way.
Mm-hmm. And the kids 2K, 2.5K, when and where does that take place?
The kids 2.5K begins at 12 o'clock, and it begins at Kincaid Park down in the stadium, and it goes out on the trails and ends up back in the stadium. And the kids event is free for children, and the parents may accompany them. And the only thing we request is that the children, there's a waiver signed for the children, and if the parents are participating with them, we would like them to sign a waiver also.
Mm-hmm. And this is put on by the Anchorage Running Club, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And there are also sponsors for this event, one of the sponsors who, or actually, and he will be doing the timing, is Skinny Raven Sports. Mm-hmm. Another one is Jamie Harvey with Jack White Real Estate and Stellar Design.
So where did the idea come from? Was it a Halloween thing? Was it, I mean, what? It's such a funny idea to have a zombie foot race.
The zombie, that half marathon began 5 years ago. This is the fifth year for the event. What happened was there were leftover T-shirts from the big wildlife runs, a lot of leftover T-shirts. And the race director from the big wildlife run said, why don't we have, in October, have a zombie half marathon? I think that might be something people would like. So for the first couple of years, it was a zombie half marathon. The next year, it was a zombie marathon, ultra marathon and a half. And then the third year, we said, the ultra and the marathon are just too much. Mm-hmm. I think we did have a marathon that year, but there were not very many participants. And last year was only a half, and that's what it is this year. The concentration is to make the half marathon a better event.
And quite a few people came out last year.
Oh, last year we had almost 800 participants in the half. And that had registered and showed up for the event. After the event, the finish is at Kincaid Chalet. We have the whole chalet. There are massage therapists there. There is pizza for all of the participants and volunteers to everyone that's there. And hopefully coffee, if the coffee lasts that long.
Yeah, and it's really the last big event and big endurance event of the year for runners. So maybe that's why so many folks come out.
Well, that might be. There are a lot, many younger people that have not participated in many of the events before. Or it's the half marathon is. Many runners like running the half. It's a little longer distance than a 10K, but it's not a full marathon.
It's a lot easier to train for it. You don't have to do all those 20-mile runs. Yeah. Well, great, Betty. Tell us how folks can sign up and how much it costs.
All right. You can go to AnchorageRunningClub.org website, and then there is a link to that Zombie Half Marathon website, which will also have a link then to the registration, which will be at bazoo.com, and that's at Skinny Raven. They will be doing the registration there. The other registration is there will be a bib pickup and registration on Monday, October 7th, 4 to 6:30, and that will be at Bosco's on Spinard Road.
Okay.
And actually, Bosco's is also a sponsor.
And what is the entry fee for adults?
And the entry fee for adults is $40. If you are an Anchorage Running Club member, it is $35.
All right. And so
then day of race, there will be day of race registration for the adults, but that is $50 with no discount for Anchorage Running Club members.
And the start is Saturday the 12th at Goose Lake at what time?
The walkers can start at 9 a.m., and runners will start at 10 a.m.
Great.
And the kids' race will be at 12 o'clock at Kincaid Park.
Great. It sounds like fun. I'm hoping to be out there if I don't have another pulled muscle, and I'll maybe see you. So
that would be great.
Yeah, that's the 2013 Zombie Half Marathon and Kids Zombie 2K. And we've been hearing from race director Betty Cronin. And the links that you'll need can also be found AlaskaPublic.org. We also have links there for all the other events that we talked about on today's calendar. Thanks so much for being with us, Betty.
All right. Thank you, Charles.
Okay. Well, bye-bye.
See you on the 12th.
That's right. All right. Stay with us for the second half of the show when we'll be back to talk more about disc golf when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on future programs and add your voice to the conversation, go to AlaskaPublic.org.
We're back on Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Woolforth. Our topic today is disc golf. That's could also be called frisbee golf. I guess probably frisbee is a trade name, so that's why they call it that. But we all know what a frisbee is. And my guests are Curtis Schoenberg, who is with me from Homer, and Tim Kasednar, who's here in Anchorage. And the sport is relatively new, but it has spread really rapidly all over Alaska and all over Anchorage. And if you want to try it, there's probably a course not that far from where you live, because some of the PE teachers at the schools have put in courses. And so, Tim, if you don't mind, just run down the choices here in town of where you can try disc golf.
Sure. I think there's a course out in Palmer at the high school. And as you come into town, there's at Peters Creek, the old Glen at Peters Creek, there's an 18-hole course there that the Disc Golf Association recently upgraded and put in concrete tee pads out there. Curtis worked really hard on that, and good job with some volunteers. These are all volunteer work that happens. Mm. Eagle River High School, there's a course at Russian Jack on the ball golf course, and you have to buy a greens ticket to play there. It's $8 for a day pass. But
so you just buy it at the chalet?
You pay at the chalet, and the first tee is right there. You use the same tee pads that the ball golfers are using, and the course pretty much shadows their course. There's a course out at Kincaid Park, and the first tee is near the chalet there. There's a kiosk with a map, and it's a pretty big course. It's really nice, though, a lot of elevation change, beautiful views of the inlet. The folks up at Hilltop who run the ski area have an 18-hole course that they put in the summer. There's a $5 fee to pay there. It starts near the bottom of the hill by the little, there's a little portable stand there, and they have a nice 18-hole course there. It's challenging. It's not a beginner course, but on a beautiful day at the top, you can see the entire Alaska range, and it's, you know, really gorgeous there. Mm. There's an 18-hole course at the Forest Fair in Girdwood, and Alyeska has a course on their hill. There's a course in Seward by the elementary school. I mean, and work your way down the inlet, Kenai, I think Skyview, in Soldotna, and then the guys in Homer have a course down there.
Wow. Do you know if there's a course in Kodiak?
I don't know.
Curtis, do you know?
There isn't, but I'm imagining there will be one there within the next couple of years.
Hopefully after they hear our show, we're on the air down
there. Yeah, that's the game plan. We hope everyone puts in a course in their hometown after the show.
What about Talkeetna? Anything up there?
Talkeetna has a course. Tim can speak on that. Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a private course in Talkeetna. They're working to put a course in down by the river now. All of this stuff really happens with local volunteers, so there has to be kind of a user group, a germ of an idea, and some folks willing to spend some time and money to make that kind of thing happen. I didn't mention Fairbanks has two 18-hole courses. There's a really nice course at Birch Hill where their ski area is, mm-hmm. and there's an 18-hole course near the university. And
it seems like there's an awful lot of these. You know, you talked about how there needs to be more in Anchorage, but it seems like you don't really have to drive that far to find one.
No, you can find them if you want to.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in, we kind of jumped over a very important topic in today's show, and maybe I'll start with you, Curtis, of why disc golf? I mean, what makes it something that grabs you and won't let you go and that you really want to go out and do? First for a minute, give us the poetry of the sport.
Well, you know, I think if you've ever played ball golf before, you know, I think for a lot of people who have, you know, you realize that it's not only is it a very physically demanding game, but it's also an extremely mentally demanding game. And I think that definitely carries over with disc golf, because so much of the game is mental. You make a bad shot, you get into a rut, you know, the next thing you know, your whole round's ruined. And I think with disc golf, one of the things that I love the most, and I know Tim can attest to this, is just throwing the disc and watching it fly. I think the beauty of that is similar to a quarterback throwing a perfect pass, similar to a basketball player making a perfect shot, or a golfer hitting a ball exactly where they want to. And there's a lot of enjoyment that comes out of that, you know. And I think being able to manipulate these discs and throwing them so they turn at a certain point or do this or do that is very much enjoyable. And in all the rounds that I've played, I have never gone out and thrown, you know, the same the same score twice. I mean, maybe I have, but it happened for a variety of different reasons. I might have did well on this hole and not did well on that hole. So I think the everyday challenge that it brings and the simplicity of the game is really what draws me in. I mean, you know, like I said, it's very cheap or inexpensive to play. You know, the majority of the courses that we have in this state are free, which is a huge factor. Number two, there's not a whole lot of equipment that's needed to play. Three, it's just a great way to get out with friends and enjoy it, whether you're a recreational player or you're an advanced skill player. And I just think it's just, I don't know what it is, you know, it just takes over. It kind of just, you know, when I first started, I was kind of what we call a one-disc wonder, where I was just throwing one disc on every shot and every hole and doing the same thing again and again. And over time, I accumulated more discs and throwing this and throwing that. And now I've got, now I'm trying to get rid of discs. I have too many, and I realize that I've kind of gone a little out of control here. But, you know, I think it's just an amazing sport, and I think that Alaska has a ton of potential, because living up here where we do, ball golf courses are not treated as well as they should be. You know, I mean, this is really not the state for ball golf.
Not much of a season for it, for one thing.
There's not much of a season for it, and the requirements and the kind of maintenance and care that you need to make a golf course, really play well is extremely difficult up here. And, you know, Alaska has so much land and so many beautiful areas that a course can be put in. I mean, look at Kincaid now. It's our number one course in the state. It's our most challenging course, and it is the most beautiful course. I don't live in Anchorage, but when I did, I played Kincaid at least every week, and mm-hmm. I loved it.
Yeah, and it is beautiful. And one thing, another difference I'd point out is sort of the environmental impact. You know, there's definitely some brush cut out to make the disc golf course at Kincaid. But when you build a ball golf course, you essentially completely change the land and convert it to a whole new ecosystem. Whereas in disc golf, it seems the land can pretty much continue as it was.
Yeah, no, it really is. And, you know, I just think there's something special about it. You know, I think, like I said earlier, throwing the disc and manipulating it and watching it fly is just a thrill that I don't seem to get tired of. And I think any other disc golfer that you talk to, they probably don't either.
It never gets easy, I'm sure.
It never gets easy, and it's always challenging. And, you know, it's like I was telling someone the other day, I said, man, this game really depends so much on your mental game. And I play with people who are great disc golfers and then don't have the mental strength, and it kills them. You know, it hurts, because this is such a mental game. And I think that's where a lot of the draw to come back continues with people, is that they're challenged so much mentally and physically that, you know, they just want to come back. I got to play that hole again. I got to play that course again. I want to, you know, I got a 4 the last time I played. I really want to get a 3 this time. So,
yeah.
And I think you're always trying to improve your game. You know, you're never perfect. There's no golf round out there that is, you know, essentially perfect. You know, there's always room for improvement. So
yeah.
I kind of think that's what really draws me in and keeps me very much connected to the sport.
Let me ask about the physicality of the game, and we have some great pictures that you guys and some of your colleagues contributed that we put on the website at alaskapublic.org. Folks, just go down and click on disc golf, and the lead picture that we use here is from Scott Johnson, and it's showing Sierra Johnson on the Jack Gist golf course. And one thing you realize from this is the physicality of the game, because she is just really, really throwing that disc hard. You know, she's got her whole body is in it, you know. And so, you know, I would think of it as sort of a relaxing, not very physical game, but Tim, obviously you're walking and you're throwing this disc. Do you actually get a workout doing it? You just loosen up?
Moderate exercise, mm-hmm. you know, and it depends on the terrain changes. If you go to Hilltop, you walk up and down that hill about 3 times, uh-huh. you know, so there's several thousand feet of elevation change. And it's a lot of work to throw a frisbee uphill. So, you know, if you play that course often enough, you get bigger. Your arms get stronger. Your endurance is better. And, you know, so it kind of depends on what course you're playing and what the challenges there are. Some courses aren't very long, but, you know, there's some narrow alleys that you have to manage to disc through. So having a big arm and being able to throw far is pretty good at a course like Russian Jack, where everything's wide open and long. But it doesn't really do you much good at Peters Creek, where really you have a 15-foot alley that you have to thread for 150, 200 feet. So you have to be able to throw straight.
Wow.
Absolutely.
So how many throws does it take a reasonably skilled disc golfer to make the hole? I mean, is it like...
They have par. Pars are different. Most of the older courses were set up to be par threes. But as time goes on, you'll just see courses that have pars fours and fives. So it depends on the distance, it depends on the elevation change, and it depends on the rough, you know, just how tight it is. Is there out of bounds, you know, variables like wind or... All of that kind of affects it, but typically you could rule of thumb would be three.
And you have to play it where it lies, I assume. How does that work? You just stand on the exact spot where the frisbee landed, or how do you do that?
Well, that would be the easiest way for beginners. You just go to where your disc landed and pick it up and throw it from there. As you get more serious, you have a little marker disc about the size of a coaster, and there's competition rules. If you want to get really serious, it tells you exactly what to do when you come to your disc, how to mark it, and... If you know, but basically you're throwing from where it landed.
Okay. Do you ever lose a disc?
I've lost some discs. You know, different times of the year at Kincaid, it can be pretty challenging. There's, you know, a Devil's Club leaf is about twice as big as a frisbee. So you can be laying right underneath the leaf you're looking at, and unless you bend down there and look underneath it. So probably Kincaid, and then if the grass gets really deep at Hilltop. Yeah, you lose discs.
So some of these discs look like they're different from like the just regular frisbee that you'd buy, you know, at Fred Meyer or something.
Right.
Are they expensive, or what makes them different?
Well, what I would say first of all is if you're going to do frisbee golf, get a frisbee that's made to fly. There's a lot of promotional frisbees out there.
Right, the cheap ones, yeah.
They don't fly. It's like giving a kid a bicycle with square wheels. You know, buy a frisbee that's made to fly and then learn how to throw it. A good way to start is with a disc that's made for catching, because then you can just play catch with someone. Because what you want to do at the beginning is get a lot of throws in and kind of figure out, what does this disc do? And you start to notice different flight characteristics.
And you're holding just a real traditional-looking frisbee.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the 175 Ultra Star made by Discraft. It's made for catching. You play ultimate with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good way to learn by playing catch. But if you transition in the golf discs, what you notice is they're smaller in diameter. And even a putter, which has an edge kind of like you would see on the disc made to catch, because it's smaller diameter, it hits you with harder impact.
A lot more dense.
So I never play catch with golf discs. Mm-hmm. And when you get into drivers, you know, if you caught a driver, it would hurt. I mean, you could break
it's
a bone.
It's sharp on the edge.
It's very sharp, and it's made specifically to go far. And in order to achieve that, you have to really throw it quite hard.
Are there regulations on how large the disc can be and how much it can weigh and stuff like
there's
that?
There's a whole, you know, so the organizing body is the Professional Disc Golf Association, and they have all the specs on there. If you want to manufacture discs, what you have to do to have a qualified disc, authorized by the PDGA.
Where do you buy these things?
A lot of people buy online now, but I recommend people buy locally. I like to recommend people go to Skinny Raven. They sponsored some of our tournaments, and they're great, great sponsors of disc golf and all sorts of good things in town. They have a nice selection there.
Mm-hmm.
REI sells them. Play It Again Sports does. Some of the big box stores are starting to sell three packs. So at the right time of year, you can find a putter, a mid-range, and a driver for like $25 at Sports Authority or something like that, but they tend to not order enough and sell through them pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. So, but REI, Skinny Raven would probably be stocked up
all the time.
Yeah. So that's a really cheap sport to get into. That's about the least expensive sport you can
do.
$10.
Yeah. $10, and you know, you don't lose your disc. You can, it will last you years. And it's just your interest that'll drive you into having more discs. And, you know, you kind of get hooked on the game. And maybe you're playing with people that occasionally you would like to beat. And you think, well, maybe if I had a driver that I could throw a little further, that might help. Or if I could get a disc that would go in this direction. Because, you know, there's trees and stuff that you have to throw around, mm-hmm. like out at Kincaid, and you were mentioning it earlier. You just go to a park that's really kind of a cool place, and you find a way to put a golf course in there, and you use all these naturally occurring objects as obstructions and challenges to throw through or around, or, you know, you could... There's a tiny little gap. You could shoot straight through it, but if you miss, you're really going to have a hard time, or you could curve it all the way around mm-hmm. to the right, or maybe all the way around to
it's
the left.
Strategy, yeah.
There's challenges. I mean, that's part of what makes the game so rich, and I think is slightly different than a ball sport where a ball kind of just goes up and down with gravity. A frisbee actually flies.
You got more dimensions to deal with. What about is wind and stuff like that always?
Wind, yeah. rain.
Sure.
Yeah, and it just, I think, you know, in order to control the disc, you're just engaging more of your brain. And so when mm-hmm. you actually are successful, you're happier. You know, there's just more of a reward if more of your brain's engaged in what it is you're doing.
You talked about mm-hmm. beginner courses and more challenging courses. I guess a beginner course, just shorter holes, fewer obstructions, just simpler.
Yes. Usually mm-hmm. if you can see the basket from the tee pad, that's a good start. Some of the more challenging courses, it's like, well, around that corner, 200 feet to the left is a basket, but you can't see it till after your first shot if you landed in the right place.
That could get a little frustrating. Yeah.
It's more challenging. So you want to be able to see the basket. You want to have a relatively easy approach to it. You know, difficulty as well. I might have to lay up. I may have to settle for a shorter throw into this easy to hit open area and then try to get my second shot in closer to the basket.
Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about disc golf, and you were just hearing Tim Kasednar, who's here in Anchorage. Curtis Schoenberg is in Homer, both avid disc golfers. And my name is Charles Woolforth, your host every week on Outdoor Explorer. Curtis, I know you're involved in the Alaska Disc Golf Association, and looking on the website, I noticed that there are tournaments and competitions that take place during the year. Let's talk in the few minutes we have left about folks who have tried it, they like it, now they want to move on to the next level and get involved in formal competition. How do people get involved in that? And what does it take?
Well, getting involved in a formal competition is really up to anyone, and it seems like every time we have a tournament, we always find someone new who's new to the tournament scene, and it's great to have them because we're certainly trying to build that here and make disc golf a little bit more of a competitive sport. So, you know, to be involved or to find out about our tournaments, AlaskaDiscGolf.com is a great website. That is our website where you can find tournaments, and also we use another website now, which seems to be a lot more user friendly, is Disc Golf Scene, S-C-E-N-E. And basically, if you go there, it's almost kind of similar to like a Facebook, but it's specifically made for disc golfers. And there's tournaments posted there. You can talk to friends there. You can go and explore new courses. Hey, I'm going to be traveling down to Oregon this summer. I want to go see what kind of courses are down there, and maybe where's a course that's going to be near where I'll be. So it's a really
All right. And listeners, you don't have to write this down. Yeah, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on today's show. We've got links there. Yeah,
and so that's a great website where we post all the information for our tournaments, everything that's going down for the summer or for the year. You know, we have basically two more tournaments left. PDGA sanctioned tournaments this year. One is October 12th and 13th, and that'll be at Kincaid. Saturday is a bring your own, it's a doubles day, so it's a bring your own partner. And Sunday is a singles day, so it's kind of every man for themselves or every woman for themselves. And then a few weeks later, on the 26th of October, we're going to be having a tournament down here in Homer. Which will be called the Termination Dust Bowl, and that's just going to be a one-day tournament. And yeah, Disc Golf Scene is a great way to find out about those events. The Alaska Disc Golf site sometimes can be a little outdated, so I would be more inclined to send people to Disc Golf Scene than I would be to the ADGA website.
So how does the tournament work? Is it like a bracket or?
You know, yeah, you can pre-register. When you get there, you basically choose your division. You know, we might have a recreation division, we have an intermediate division. We have an advanced division, we have a pro division, and then we usually have a ladies division. And sometimes we get lucky and we have a masters division, and a masters division is 40 and over, just similar to golf. We have masters, we have grandmasters, we have senior masters, we have legends, and you'll see more of that if you go down south and play. But so basically I would get to a tournament and I'll decide what division I'm going to play. Hey, I'm going to play open this weekend, I'm going to play pro, so I'll pay my money. And then the tournament director basically takes all the people from the certain divisions puts them into either groups of three or four, and everyone starts on a certain hole. We usually call it a shotgun start. So I might start on hole one, Tim might start on hole three, and Charles, you might start on hole four, you know, depending upon what division we're in and that and so forth. So basically, we go out in the morning, we play a full 18 holes, we come back, we take lunch, the tournament director tallies up the scores, and based on the scores of who shot the best and who shot the worst, we set the cards out again for the afternoon. Charles, you might have had a great round. You're going to start on hole one. Tim and I might not have had the best round. We're going to start on hole five. So then we go back out again. We play another 18 holes. And then based upon whether it's a one-day tournament or a two-day tournament, if it's a one-day, then we do awards. We do a ceremony. We try and do some extra games to get people involved, you know, and then we give out awards and prizes. If it's two-day, then we usually do the same thing the next day. And then we'll do our awards and prizes and things like that at the end.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
It's a great event. It's a great time.
You probably want to, I mean, for those who've done the sport and have tried it, why not go out and just see what it's like to compete, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Tim, tell me about, we talked a little bit at the very beginning about the community of disc golf in Anchorage and some of your goals to build more courses and have a sort of a stronger community. Is there a club or something where people can get involved, or is that something that's still sort of coming to pass? We just got a minute or two left.
I think ideally what happens is as you get more and more facilities, you have local users kind of bond with it. So there is a pretty heavy group of people bonded with Westchester. Mm-hmm. Kincaid is starting to get that way. If you go to the Fairbanks courses, there's a local club attached to the course, and they'll run leagues, and they'll do maintenance, and they'll run events there. So in the future, I see, you know, user groups kind of getting attached to either the Hilltop course, Kincaid course, Russian Jack course, and then doing more events there. And then ideally you could go to your neighborhood course or facility somewhere and get involved in that. So that is a slow work in progress. If people are interested in having more Frisbee golf facilities in their neighborhood, I think the best thing to do is go to their community council meeting and see if there's any interest there and try to organize at that level. And then talk to your state legislature through your community council and ask for a little pile of money. And it doesn't have to be a lot to get two or three baskets in your local park. It can be, you know, as little as $2,000 or $3,000. And they have discretionary money that they can give into their district, mm-hmm. to the Park Foundation or to Parks and Rec, where, you know, that money would go.
Or just go out and throw a neighborhood fundraiser or whatever.
Right, yeah. Right. And that, you know, the Disc Golf Association is doing work, and, you know, they're the folks that Parks and Rec will talk to when they need to talk to the disc golfers. Mm-hmm. You know, you could do a lot of stuff locally if you just wanted to see more stuff going on in your neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, this has been great. It went by quickly. I want to thank my guest, Curtis Schoenberg, who is in Homer and took some time off from work to talk with us about disc golf. Thanks, Curtis.
You're welcome. Thank you, Charles.
And Tim Kasetnar, who's an interesting person besides disc golfers. Did you ride your bike out here today?
Yeah, I ride my bike everywhere,
Charles. Yeah, he's a total bike guy as well, and I've known him for a long time, a wonderful community member. Earlier, we heard from Betty Cronin, who's a race director of the Zombie Half Marathon and Kids 2.5K. You can learn about that event and everything else we've talked about on our website at alaskapublic.org. Next week, we're talking about biking in the transition season, cyclocross, and commuting in the winter. Please join us and give us your thoughts on our Facebook page. That's all for today. Thanks for joining us. Our producer and audio engineer was Kristen Platt. I'm Charles Wolfort.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Outdoor Explorer and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.